Hi, Sergeant. We're here at Berlinale, where you present your first feature film, Take Me Home. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, and now you have it here at Berlinale. Would you like to tell about the origin of this story, which is based in your eponymous short film? It's very close to your personal life experience.
Yeah, this film I've been thinking about forever. It comes from love of my family and my sister, who is a star of the film. We shot it in Orlando, Florida, in my parents' home, and it was written from just taking big emotional moments that I had of like love and protection for her and then building a script out of it. Been a long journey. Since 2023, we premiered the short proof of concept at Sundance, and it's grown from there. And so it's nice to bring it back here or bring it here as a feature.
And your actual sister is playing the lead both in the short film and in the feature film, like a version of herself. What were her ideas about the film? How did she feel about it after doing the short and doing the feature? And how did she separate? Because your sister has actually a cognitive disability. How does she deal with this difference between playing somebody on screen that's very close to whom she actually is without becoming too vulnerable herself?
That's a very good question. I think, you know, Anna understands the world and what movie making is in a very different way than I think we do. For me, being at the Berlinale is, you know, it's hard for me to even take it in. And it's really an exciting experience to share this film with a huge audience. And I don't know if she really fully understands the power of this film right now. Being in the film was an exciting process. In the short film, we had a crew of about 15 people. And then in the feature, it was about 50. But Anna is the youngest of 11 children. Our parents are white Midwesterners who had 4 biological kids, and they adopted 7 more. 6 of them are Korean. I'm the middle, and Anna's the youngest. So she's used to sort of the chaos and a lot of people, and it's exciting for her. And I think her being in the middle and the center of attention with a support team was, she only grew, you know, in amazing ways. Like, she's just so, has such great ownership of herself right now and self-agency. We had an accessibility producer and also a acting coach on set, and they were her team that really helped her understand the script. They read through the script. They did the scenes. They talked about the pretend self and the real self. A lot to dance through and figure out. But I think the beauty of that blurred line is that she also had a shortcut and an understanding to the story. Yeah, it was an interesting process and to learn and to keep her protected throughout.
You also told us that you shot in the actual house of your parents. So how did they feel about you making a movie out of their lives too?
You know what? My parents are just the ultimate parents who just love their children so much, and they were so excited to be able to offer something to their children, and they're so proud of us to be here and to share their story. I think to me, sharing their story is about these lives that go unseen at this very vulnerable point, and I think it's important to talk about and also to show them that their lives are important right now exactly as they are. But a longer version of this story is that in April 2025, they both went into the ER, and I was in Florida in the similar situation to the film, taking care of them, fighting the Florida HMO Medicare system. And I was taking meetings out of the ER, just trying to keep my personal and creative life going. We went to Tribeca and we pitched for this AT&T award. That's $1 million. We won it. And then a month later, we were in pre-production. My father, my parents, you know, because they're the ultimate parents, they sort of stabilized their health while we were shooting the film. My father came back and we gave him options that we didn't need to shoot in the house, but he, even in, you know, his recovery, wanted to give it to us. And so he moved out into an Airbnb while we filmed the movie with, like, so much of their belongings are there. Like, I give them production design credit because it is their life and their world that they're sharing, and that is a story in there. And then afterwards, my father lives there now, and Anna actually transitioned to live with my other sister, who has become her guardian. So it was a big, big career growth and also life growth for all of us.
Why did you decide to keep your other siblings out of the story? Was it merely simply dramatical concerns that would be too many characters, or personal concerns?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to originally. In 2015, we tried to do a documentary, and that was just too hard to wrangle. Truth and the little moments that I saw just didn't come through in this kind of documentary I was trying to make. And then I tried to write a script with the whole family, and it was just a bigger undertaking and a longer undertaking than I could ever take on at that point. But also, I think this is just a distilled idea of all of the feelings of our family, and it just was a cleaner story in a way.
Were you worried at some point that this story becomes too personal?
I work from a place that's too personal. I think it's important. To me, that's my guiding light. It's what makes, it's a shortcut to knowing all the answers and knowing that no matter what, very simple universal story will be unique and personal because it comes from that place that only I can have.
You already said, and this essential, so there's this essential element of the story, the healthcare system or the lack of proper healthcare. And I think that's a universal problem, but surely much worse in the US. I mean, it's bad in Europe, as many people are probably not aware how bad it is, especially in regard to taking care of people with neurological and psychological challenges. But in the US, there's really seems to be no kind of network. Would you like to talk a little bit about the challenges and maybe also what you think would need to happen? Because you also give us, in the end, an idea of a better opportunity.
Well, in the US, every state is totally different with the resources for healthcare, for Medicare. I think it's Medicaid. You have to reapply in each state. So even moving Anna from Florida to Colorado is very different. Florida, strangely, has so many people retiring there and many disabled people and has the least resources. So the hardest thing, I think, is to understand what's different in every single state. And also, we don't talk about what is available until there's an emergency. So I think there's so much learning to be done. Usually when you're in that point, you don't have a chance to sort of be vocal and create change. But I think what I do want to talk about is using this film as an opening to talk about what's available and looking at these lives and knowing that they deserve so much more and thinking about where, what happens for our future care and what should happen. So, you know, there's an ending that's a grounded magical realism that I think is a possible place that we could make if we just put our money and our time and our energy in different ways in this world and especially in America. And my hope is that just we love these people, we love this family, and we think about the people in our lives. And I think that will spark us to protect them and to vote differently.
Was there ever a point during shooting when you felt you couldn't maybe go on or that there were difficulties that would arise that would make it impossible to continue this film?
Every day felt like I wasn't sure. It was the hardest movie I could think of, even though it's a tiny movie in a house, you know, really being of service to how Anna thinks and creating an environment where she was going to give her best performance. That was the challenge, thinking about cognitive accessibility. But it was August. It was so hot in Orlando. There were rainstorms every day and lightning storms, and we had to shut down. There was a hurricane watch. It was the hardest. It was a really, really, really hard shoot. But honestly, it's like making this opportunity for my sister, for myself, and for my family was the thing that kept me going and knowing that it was important. In this day and age when movies are impossible to make, I always thought to myself, no matter what happens to this film, at least I will have made this experience to sort of help us all transition and have some kind of ownership of our lives.
Part of the beauty of this film is that you also show all the things that Anna does for your parents. So we don't only see her as a person that needs to be taken care of, but also as a caretaker, which is very rare to show all the things that people with challenges or disabilities can give to their families and society. Is this based in real life that she took care of your parents?
Yeah, but you know what? I didn't realize it until we started working with our partners, Caring Across Generations, who are executive producers and also helping us with our sort of marketing and impact campaign, that she was also a caregiver. And that's my bad. You know, I think I did so much learning through making this film and really looking at her as like a fully dimensional human being and thinking about all the ways she gives back that I don't give her credit for, but are so important. And what was awesome is in making this film, she, you know, she had the team around her. And I think we all saw how much she gives back to the people around her.
Does she also enjoy doing press work and promotion work for the film, like interviews and stuff, or maybe just together with you appearing, or does she keep out of these things?
Yeah, it's so interesting because her memory is very specific. She doesn't really have short-term memory. She's a very hard time with that. Sometimes you can spark her long-term memory, so you could ask her a question about something that happened on set, but oftentimes she doesn't really know how to articulate that. And that's sort of what we wanted to lean in into the film. But I mean, she loves having the attention. It's like so amazing to see her in front of an audience and have that applause and that appreciation go towards her. You can see her light up, and I think that's what we all deserve in our lives, and especially her. But no, she's becoming a little, you know, she doesn't have a problem with confidence. You know, at Sundance, she was doing the carpet. She was doing the photos. She learned all her poses. So she hams it up.
So now that you worked on this very personal story, are you considering doing documentary films about other subjects or fiction films? Because this one is like on the edge of documentary and fiction.
I think because my background's in like modern dance and experimental theater, I really look at each story and what it calls for and what it needs. The next film that I'm sort of creating in collaboration with Ali An, who plays the sister for this film, is an adoptee reunion film that might push a little more toward genre. It's about nature and nurture and finding your dark side. And that's personal to me about sort of connecting with my biological family and biological side. So to me, it's always personal because it's just the root and the heart of like of the story. So
going back to this personal aspect, how much of this film that we see with Anna is actually based in your own life experience? And where are the parts where fiction starts?
It all starts from a very, very real, almost diary entry. I think a lot of times when I have like a vision for a scene or a moment that I think is so profoundly beautiful and important, it's from like big emotional real life experiences that I don't really know how to take in or process. But it starts from there. And then it's sort of idea of like, how would that conversation or story play out for good or for bad, but in a grounded way. And then also in the process of making this film, specifically because of Anna and surrounding her with the right process, it was a bit of a structured improv. So the actors also brought in a bit of their interpretation, and whatever was happening in the moment sort of grew and changed in a very organic way. So
how many years did it take altogether to realize the story from the first idea to the finished film?
We tried to do the documentary in 2015, and then I was doing short scripts and just applying because I don't come from, you know, I don't have a financial backstop. I don't have, you know, I didn't have industry connections really. So I was really just doing this, all this work through fellowships and getting small grants and trying to figure out how to make a film. So finally, I won a grant with Julia Gowan, Kate, and Janet Yang. And it was for $15,000. And then I built a Kickstarter off of it. And that was in 2022. And then the film premiered in 2023. So, and then I wrote the feature in about a year later and had just, I just kept on searching and trying to build connections organically to people who would believe in this tiny sort of risk-taking story.
An essential aspect of the story is also the need of the main character, which is based in yourself, Emily, to protect herself and protect her own mental health because she gets overwhelmed by this whole family situation, which seems kind of contrary to the fact that you as a filmmaker get very, very involved in this. Was there ever a point where you had to step back to protect yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think this is the most important thing I can think of to do with my time and my energy. But I also, you know, I'm a creative person and that's what I need to do. I don't know how to have another job. I've tried to have some kind of office job and I go nuts. So this is my way of multitasking. This is my, strangely, my way of stepping back and also supporting and saving the people around me.
How does it feel to be now at Berlinale and present this film at this festival, especially right after Sundance?
Honestly, I'm really exhausted.
Fair enough. I'm always glad if people admit that I'm exhausted. Everybody's exhausted. Yeah.
We're at the end of the festival and it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. I'm actually taking a lot of naps and trying to preserve my energy, but it's just like the adrenaline and the excitement. But to be at Berlinale, especially because this is such a tiny American story that's so, so specific. And it means so much to me to be like in the lineup of perspectives that's so like world cultures, world ideas, and to say that this story is important and represents this quiet, invisible lives of America right now. So much is happening that's so harrowing, so important in America, but also these lives are important.
Now that you show this film to an international audience, what would you hope that they take away from it?
I think universally, we all just want to like care for the people we love and have our basic needs met. And that's it. I mean, I think that like that's the root of a lot of our problems. And I hope that just creates empathy around us and just creates wave and change of what we think is important in this world.
Thank you so much for this interview, Liz Sargent. Take Me Home is now at Berlinale and we keep an eye on it when it gets a German cinema release. Thank you.
Thank you.